Hello, my name is Kennedy Sam, and welcome to this week's edition of Conversations with Creative Waco. We are a fourth Friday feature on KWBU. Keep listening for conversations with creatives and community leaders making an impact in our artistic and cultural sector. As the year quickly winds down, today's episode will highlight a few programs coming this holiday season and give you a sneak peek into what's coming in 2022. First, I will be joined by Carolyn Bess, who serves as the new executive director of the Waco Symphony Association, to learn more about her journey back to Waco and what's in store for this symphony season. In the second half of the episode, we'll be sitting down with Rebecca Nall of the Mayborn Museum to hear about their current exhibits and their annual Christmas lights in the village. Later on, we'll hear the segment David and Art with David Smith. So to kick off this month's show, we welcome Carolyn Bess with the Waco Symphony Association. How are you doing today?
Great, Kennedy. How are you?
Good. It's so good to have you here and welcome back to Waco. So can you give a little background into you and your life as a Waco native and how you kind of ended back up here?
Sure. I grew up here in Waco from preschool through high school and am just delighted to be back. I'm only 10 weeks onto the job.
Oh, yeah. So. Pretty fresh.
Pretty fresh.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about your personal introduction to the arts and how that kind of shaped your early childhood?
Sure. You know, my parents did a great job of exposing me to the arts early on. I remember, you know, falling asleep every night to my dad playing classical music on the piano.
Yeah.
They took me to art museums a lot when we were growing up. And that really fostered my love of the arts from a young age. I grew up playing the piano, studied piano with Doyce Edwards here for 12 years, started playing the flute in fifth grade, and played in the Vanguard band during junior high and high school, sang in the Waco Girls Choir and in my university choir during college years at Sewanee, and even ventured into learning the organ during college.
Oh, so you were super active in the arts. Yeah. So how do you feel like being immersed in such a creative household and having all these opportunities to practice creative disciplines kind of shaped your career trajectory?
Yeah. And, you know, I would say, you know, funny story about how my parents encouraged me to practice. So when the alarm clock went off every morning, it was get your rear on the piano bench and practice for an hour before school. And at first, I thought it was a special form of torture, but I can really appreciate that it really instilled a strong work ethic and just the true fact that practice makes perfect and really allowed me, I think, to achieve greater things artistically than if I hadn't had that discipline or that encouragement.
Yeah. So as a musician yourself, did you ever go to any of the symphony's performances growing up?
I did. And I have vivid memories of going to Waco Symphony concerts as a child with my parents. I remember also going with my classmates to a children's concert and riding out a tornado in Waco Hall.
That's very, very on brand for Waco.
Right? I know.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
The best kind of trauma there is.
Right.
You have a little bit of cultural aspects into it.
Yeah.
So you said you've been here about 10 weeks.
Right.
So how was your time with the Dallas Museum of Art, and what kind of work did you do there?
Yeah, so for the past 25 years, I worked at the Dallas Museum of Art. So I got my master's degree in art history and loved the visual arts as well as performing arts, and had a fantastic career as director of Arts and Letters Live, which is the DMA's Literary and Performing Arts series. So I programmed many award-winning and best-selling authors to come in and talk about their latest work and their creative process. I commissioned new performances inspired by works of art and various exhibitions, and really was able to merge art forms in creative ways, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's super interactive because I've seen, you know, so many different things come through the Dallas area, like the Van Gogh with the music and all that. So it's really awesome to have you in our space, and we're excited to see how you know, your past can influence some of the things coming forward. So what kind of motivated or encouraged your transition back to Waco and from, you know, a fine arts facility to more of a music and performance facility?
Yeah, I would say it was twofold. You know, I think the pandemic really gave me a moment to sort of reevaluate my priorities and came back to Waco several times during the pandemic and just felt such a warmth and sort of a tug to come home. Mm-hmm. And I still have family and good friends here. And I've also just been so impressed by the exciting things happening on the cultural arts scene here. And I was looking for a new creative challenge. So I think this really fits the bill, and I'm excited about the future.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the Waco Symphony Association and the Waco Symphony Orchestra? So I'm guessing the Symphony Association is an umbrella. And so yes. What kind of falls under those?
So we were established in 1962, so we're celebrating our 59th season this year. And so the Waco Symphony Orchestra is under the umbrella, as well as the Waco Symphony Youth Orchestra, which is celebrating its 30th season this year. And so a lot of people don't know as much about that, but it features this year about 35 students from 8th to 12th graders all over Central Texas who are encouraged to audition, and it gives them the opportunity to study, rehearse, perform great orchestral music under professional guidance. And Dr. Bo Benson, who's the director of Midway Orchestras, is their music director and conductor. I went to their fall concert, and it was truly fantastic.
That's awesome. So what is the role of the Waco Symphony Association and the Waco Symphony Orchestra in our community?
Yeah, our vision and mission is to provide superlative music performances and also really to foster music education in our community. And, you know, I think that we've been so fortunate over the years to feature classical music soloists who are just, just rock stars. Mm-hmm. So including pianist Van Cliburn, Itzhak Perlman, the cellist Yo-Yo Ma, opera singer Renee Fleming, and so many more in the pops genre, like Art Garfunkel and saxophonist Branford Marsalis. So I think it's wonderful that Waco is able to support bringing these first-rate musicians to our community, and we should be so proud that we have truly a first-rate orchestra living, working, and studying and performing here together in the community.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned this a little bit earlier that you guys have like 30 young musicians and students who are in the youth orchestra.
Right.
How important is it to have that kind of experience as a young person who has just a passion and drive for music? And what kind of ways do you guys cultivate, furthering, their education and passion for the arts?
I think it's so important at an early age to have those musical experiences. There are so many studies that show that students who are actively involved in music are, they're stretched in so many interesting ways. Critical thinking, even their math skills, creative expression, and leadership skills are all developed as you become a musician.
So you guys' season recently kicked off, right?
Right.
In like October with the,
yes,
I think they were sisters or twins,
yes,
with
twin
kind of like dueling pianists.
Yeah. Christina and Michelle Naughton, and they were phenomenal. Twin pianists performing on two Steinways, mm-hmm. and it was an all French-themed concert, and they were truly just jaw-droppingly amazing, just how they performed almost as one together was really remarkable. Their teamwork and how they passed these musical phrases so effortlessly back and forth to one another. It was amazing.
Yeah. So when you guys bring in outside talents to mesh with what our orchestra has, mm-hmm. what's the process like to practice together and make sure that everything is hitting on all cylinders?
Yeah. They are in town for several days. The Naughtons were here for 3 days rehearsing with the orchestra. So it is very much, a teamwork effort. They've rehearsed their repertoire alone, and the symphony has rehearsed itself together. Mm-hmm. But it really is an amazing process to see it all come together and to really watch the sparks fly on the stage during the premiere.
So for that being the first performance of the season, mm-hmm. and that being, your first show as the ED for the Waco Symphony Association, what was the energy like in the room and in the crowd?
the energy was amazing. So, you know, I mean, after more than 18 months of silence, to have Maestro Hyde lift his baton again, and just that, you know, it was one of the things that I missed the most during the pandemic was live music, mm-hmm. and the opportunity to be in a hall together experiencing live music. The energy was just really palpable, and people were buzzing about it and very complimentary afterwards.
Yeah. So you guys have a show coming up in December, the Nutcracker, yes. a holiday favorite of all.
Right.
So can you tell a little bit about what people can expect from that on the symphony side, and then also its partnership with the Ballet Frontier of Texas?
Yes. We're excited to partner again with Ballet Frontier. They're from Fort Worth, and we'll be partnering with 50 local dance students here locally as well, who will be performing the role of the party guests and Chinese and Russian dancers. And it was so fun to be at their auditions and just sort of watch the visions of sugar plums dancing in their heads, and excitement to be in this iconic production.
Yeah, what are the age ranges of those?
I think
performers?
They range from 7 to 12.
Awesome. So it's just like local dance companies just
had
open?
Wow. Had, yeah, yeah. So open auditions, and so exciting for them to be on the stage.
And so last year, we got to partner with the orchestra with Texas Music Cafe to do kind of a digital virtual Christmas special with you guys. So, I mean, that it was just so interesting to see like the various smaller, I don't know the exact word for it, but like the strings and then
the smaller ensembles
yes.
in different locations. Yeah, it was a wonderful production.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to hear this year's. I haven't been to Nutcracker in forever, so I really hope we get to make it. So with the Nutcracker ending the season for this year, what's happening in the second half of the 2022 season?
Yeah, we'll kick off 2022 with a concert on January 20th with Mia Orozco-Kelso, who's a classical violinist and a fiddler. And she is really a hometown success story. She grew up in Lorena. She won the Waco Symphony Youth Orchestra Concerto Competition. So she was in the youth orchestra. She served as concertmaster of the Baylor Symphony for 3 years and went on to rack up all these national and international championships, both in violin and fiddling. And she made her Grand Ole Opry debut just a few years ago. So it'll be exciting to have her back in Waco to be featured with the symphony. And the theme of that particular concert is immortal stories. Mm-hmm. She's playing Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, and we'll also do a lot of fancy fiddling too. So it'll be a wonderful blend of different genres.
Yeah, that's beautiful to have someone who grew up in our community mm-hmm. be able to come back in such an amazing way. And I also saw that you guys have Billy Dee Williams coming.
Yes, that's Thursday, April 28th. Yeah. So that will be the end of our season, Sounds of the Cinema. And he is best known as Lando Calrissian from the Star Wars mm-hmm. movies, but was in many other iconic films too. Lady Sings the Blues and Mahogany. And he will share highlights from his career and the orchestra will present iconic soundtracks from his life and film.
That's awesome. Yeah. So how were those parts chosen? Is it just like a certain film that's kind of special to him, or is it just key films?
Yeah, key films that he has performed in and the orchestral scores that go with those.
Yeah, beautiful. So moving forward, how can people find tickets or purchase tickets or season tickets with you guys?
On our website at wacosymphony.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mark your calendars. The Waco Symphony Orchestra will be performing The Nutcracker with Ballet Frontier of Texas at 2 p.m. on December 12th at Waco Hall. Find more information on future performances and grab your tickets today at wacosymphony.com. I'm your host, Kennedy Sam, and this is Conversations with Creative Waco. Keep listening, and we'll be back in a few. Here's David Smith with this week's edition of David and Art.
A 1965 work of art has deep roots in the experiences of one American musician. Here's David Smith with this week's edition of David and Art.
Last week, we talked about saxophone player John Coltrane, one of the absolute giants of American music. There's a sense that you get when you talk to some of his devotees that his name should be spoken almost with reverence. that his music unlocked something deep in the human soul, that more than any other artist, his work was a conduit to a higher plane of spirituality. Indeed, there's a church in San Francisco that has rather adopted him as its patron saint. In 1957, the year he turned 30, Coltrane quit the heroin and the alcohol to which he had become addicted years earlier, quit cold turkey, as they say. He attributed his recovery in part to the grace and power of God. After cleaning up, he rejoined Miles Davis in time to make the sensational Kind of Blue album in 1959. Then over the next few years, Coltrane branched out and, starting with the 1960 album Giant Steps, recorded some of the most creative and emotional music ever made. After assembling his own classic quartet consisting of himself, pianist McCoy Tyner, bassist Jimmy Garrison, and drummer Elvin Jones, he went on to record the 1961 album My Favorite Things, which featured his version of the song from the musical The Sound of Music, which had opened on Broadway 2 years earlier and won 5 Tonys. It became something of a hit. On November 18, 1963, Coltrane went into the studio with his quartet and recorded a plaintive song called Alabama, a memorial to 4 little girls who were killed by a bomb planted by Klan members in a Birmingham church. Critic Ben Ratliff called the piece an accurate psychological portrait of a time, a complicated mood that nobody else could render so well. Coltrane's music tapped into the deep sense of spirituality and emotion that also underlies the blues, but he was able to express it with his horn and with the sound and the structure of his songs instead of through lyrics. In 1964, he remarked to his ex-wife that 90% of his playing was actually praying. Cornel West, who now teaches philosophy and Christian practice at Union Theological Seminary, called Coltrane the grand exemplar of 20th century black spirituality. In 1965, Coltrane poured all of that into a recording that to him represented the ultimate expression of God's love and grace. Let's turn our attention to that record next week.
You can find this and past David and Art segments on our website at kwbu.org. Look for David and Art in the Programs tab.
This is Conversations with Creative Waco, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. We are back and now joined with Rebecca Nall with the Mayborn Museum to hear more about current exhibits and their holiday programming and what's in the pipeline for 2022. Rebecca, thank you for stopping by.
Thank you for asking me. I'm excited to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, your work with the Mayborn Museum?
Yes, I have always wanted to work in museums. I'm excited to be at the Mayborn Museum. I've been there since 2007, so a good bit of time, and I just love it. No day is the same, yeah. And it's really great getting to inspire lifelong learning in the community.
What is the Mayborn Museum, and kind of how was it founded?
So the Mayborn Museum, we're Baylor University's Natural History Museum. We actually started in 1893 with different professors on campus collecting items to share with their classes, like the biology class, mm-hmm. biology department. And we have evolved from there. The museum was in different spots throughout campus until 2004, whenever the building that we're in now was built. And whenever that happened, we combined with a couple of other entities that were in town. The Governor Bill and Vera Daniel Historic Village, which mm-hmm. is outside the museum, was moved there to that spot in the 80s. And so building the beautiful building that we have now right next to it made sense. And then also there was a children's museum downtown that was the Ollie Mae Moen Discovery Center. Mm-hmm. And so we acquired that collection and took over those exhibits, incorporated them into the new building. So we're really 3 entities in one, yeah. that have come together, but we have something for everyone. We have a natural science and cultural history wing, a multi-floor hands-on discovery center that is fun for kids and adults alike.
Yeah.
and an outdoor historic village. It's set in the 90s, and it's just right on the river. It's actually, and also right next to the football stadium, yeah. So we've got good views.
Right, great views and all that. So you mentioned that you guys are a natural history museum. What exactly does that mean, and what kind of things are you guys collecting?
Well, we don't have any dinosaurs in our collection, because that is the first thing whenever kids come, they want to see the dinosaurs. We do have a T-Rex that's standing in the rotunda right now that is a cast that's on loan for the Perot Museum for the next couple of years. So that is really fun whenever you get to step right in and you see like a full-size T-Rex skeleton. But we are a repository of items that have been collected in this area. So our collection is pretty varied. We have a history collection, and that is the range of about 100 miles around Waco up until the 1890s.
Oh, wow.
But we also do collect items that are Baylor-related because we are Baylor's museum. And then we have a geosciences collection, a biology collection, and encompass that is a mussel collection, mm-hmm. herpetology, birds, eggs. So it's quite varied, and I'm forgetting a lot of things. But
very well-rounded.
It is very varied, and we do have a lot of researchers that will come to us and say, hi, I know that you have, a bunch of these different types of frogs, mm-hmm. and I've been, doing a study on, the size of these frogs or where they lived.
Wow.
And so we have our collection staff work with a lot of researchers for that, and it is well-utilized. We've had some pretty well-known herpetologists that have worked in the museum in the past. And so we have a very good collection.
Yeah. So are those collections like permanent installations, or do they kind of rotate throughout the year?
Like most museums, what you see on exhibit is really only 10% of what is available behind the scenes.
Oh, wow.
So elsewhere in the museum, we have a big collection storage, which are a lot of where the other stuff mm-hmm. is. And then we also have two offsite storage areas. And one of them is a wet collection storage area, which is where all the, creepy
the jars,
things in jars are.
Yeah.
So it's really fun to get to go check those out. And we do have, there are rules about how long certain items can be on display because light can damage mm-hmm. Objects. Different temperature and humidity variations can damage artifacts. So our collections team stays on top of that to see, okay, well, has this been out for a little while? And then they'll rotate it in with something similar. We have a log house in our Texas Lifeways exhibit that represents, it is the beams or pieces from a house that was in this area in the 1800s. And so you can kind of look in and see a vignette of what life was like during that time. And there's a baby cradle and a quilt and an embroidery sampler. And those are things that they'll replace over time with other things that we have in our collection.
Got you. So is there a difference between things that you have on collections and then exhibits?
Well, you use your collections as a, as a baseline for exhibits.
Yeah, because I know you guys just had a really big one with the dinosaurs that partnered. And so it was really exciting to see.
Yeah, that was a traveling exhibit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All the crates that came in and just the size of those. So what is the process for kind of deciding, what you guys are going to showcase and what will be the theme of the exhibit on display?
Yeah, so the World's Largest Dinosaurs exhibit that we just hosted, it was a traveling exhibit. So we have our permanent exhibits, and then we'll also do short-term exhibits that are, done in-house with our collection. And then we also will host traveling exhibits that are put together by other museums or businesses. And so the World's Largest Dinosaur exhibit was developed by the American Museum of Natural History. And it was curated by their curator of paleontology. So it was really cool that we got to host that and bring a little bit of New York to Waco.
Yeah.
And, one of the coolest dinosaur museums in the world. So the process for, we typically book those out, like the exhibit that we have in our big traveling exhibit space, a couple of years in advance. So we are looking at, what our community wants to see, the folks that come to the museum all of the time, like what they might want to see. And then we just try to vary, like, who we have we see a lot of families that mm-hmm. come to the museum, so we want to have some great family exhibits, and then we also want to have some that might appeal to a slightly different audience. So we're making sure that we're serving everyone that's in the community.
So you mentioned families. I know, so I guess the village is, you know, a permanent exhibit that's in the back of you guys. Mm-hmm. So during Christmas time, you guys are putting up lights and stuff. So can you talk a little bit more about what that exhibit looks like in the December?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are hosting Christmas Lights in the Village again this year. It's an annual event, and we're going to be hosting it from the 10th through the 12th and the 17th through the 19th from 6 to 8. And we've added 30,000 lights to the historic village. I think we're in the process of doing that right now. And it's going to be beautiful. We hosted it in 2019, and it was just a lot of fun. So we have Santa and Mrs. Claus are going to be there, and you can take pictures with them. We're going to have some really great food trucks. We have a really fun audio tour throughout the museum and the village all the time, but we've made a Christmas-specific one mm-hmm. for Christmas Lights in the Village, so you can hear specifically about holiday traditions in the 1890s and how they were different than today and maybe a little how they are the same. Yeah. And I think we even have, Santa on the audio tour as well, because he's the everyone's always really excited mm-hmm. to see Santa. We will also have a petting zoo, which is the star of the show.
Will you guys have reindeers?
I don't know if we'll have reindeers. In 2019, we had puppies.
That was
pretty great. The puppies were what everyone wanted to see.
Yeah, a showstopper right there. That is so cute. So how can people engage with you guys, either through the Christmas Lights Village or just in the day-to-day collection that you guys have on site?
Well, we have a lot of really great information on our website. It's www.mayborn-museum.com. And we have a lot of information about our collections on the website. We have a little Ask the Curator section. If you have something interesting at home that you want to learn more about. And then we have Christmas lights on the website. We also just added the Lifelong Learning Program at Baylor to the Mayborn Museum. So that is for folks that are 50 years, age 50 and better, mm-hmm. who are interested in learning more. There's classes that they offer in the fall and the spring that you can sign up for. And we've got a lot of information on the website about that as well.
Yeah, I remember my younger years. I had a lot of fond memories visiting you guys, playing with the bubble machine and the tornado machine upstairs. So just being able to have that across age ranges is such an important and key factor to have in our community to make people just get out and get active.
Yeah, well, our mission is to inspire lifelong learning. And that can really be done at any age. You're never done learning.
Yeah.
And so we do see, kids that can't walk yet coming into the museum, all the way, through your life. And we have opportunities for everyone.
Yeah. So what's coming in 2022?
Well, in 2022, we're bringing our next traveling exhibit, and it is also about dinosaurs, but it's Dinosaur Train.
Okay.
Which is PBS television show about dinosaurs that are traveling on a train to learn more about life in the Cretaceous.
Nice.
And we're really excited to have that. So we hosted World's Largest Dinosaurs over the summer, and that was a higher level exhibit, and this will be for families. But also, Dinosaur Train has been out for a little while, so I think there's going to be a little bit of nostalgia for kids who maybe are adults now that grew up with Dinosaur Train.
Yeah. So when is that going to be installed?
It's going to open January 29th and be on display through May 1st.
Awesome. Well, perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You guys have a lot in store, so we are so excited for that. Grab your friends and family and get into the holiday spirit with the Mayborn's Christmas Lights in the Village December 10th through 12th and 17th through 19th. Tickets are on sale now at baylor.edu/Mayborn. Connect with the museum on Facebook and Instagram at Mayborn Museum to stay up to date with what's going on at the complex. Catch the next episode on Friday, December 31st for more deep dives into local arts and culture. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.